ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Chad Riley.
Howdy.
How's it going, my friend?
So well.
I'm
very chill at the moment.
We are actually, it's actually later in the evening. We don't normally record around this time, but we are here late because of an awesome reason. And that is, we just got out of the Wonder Woman screening.
Yeah, like moments ago.
Like maybe 5-10 minutes ago.
This is like back in the early days when we used to hit the screening and then come and record the review right after.
We would rush straight over and...
We had no concept of planning ahead, structure, organization, none of that.
Tell us all the other great stuff that we had about the
show. Now we're, you know, generally orderly and most of the time better off for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, and then now we have more time to work with the screenings and whatnot. This was kind of a last-minute deal where we just jumped on that train and we were like, do we want to go to a Wonder Woman screening? Yeah. So. So, of course, we went to the screening and we ran straight back to the studio so we could talk to you. The Filmosophers is presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live each week at VGB Studios. Feel like you're stuck in the past on an isolated island? Stay up to date on the latest movie news and reviews of new film releases with episodes of The Filmosophers every Wednesday morning on iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, and Stitcher. Don't worry, we'll always tell you the truth. No lassoing required. Connect with us on social media to keep the conversation going. Like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 for more opportunities to connect. Last but not least, you can access all of our previous episodes at vgbstudios.com alongside other amazing podcasts like Video Game Bang and Me, Mike Self, and I. I am super stoked to get into this conversation because honestly, the movie was it blew my mind, to say the least. And so now that we're kind of with the embargo going up last night so that people can actually talk about it, I don't actually feel quite as bad talking about it right now.
That's right. I mean, we are spoiler rich potentially. I don't think we're going to want to ruin it totally but
you'll hear stuff. We'll do a classy spoiler review. I mean, we're going to still give you little juicy tidbits here and there.
Eddie, we're always classy.
We are always classy.
Well, we're 80% classy.
Before she was Wonder Woman, she was Diana, princess of the Amazons, trained to be an unconquerable warrior. Raised on a shelter island paradise, Diana meets an American pilot who tells her about the massive conflict that's raging in the outside world. Convinced that she can stop the threat, Diana leaves her home for the first time. Fighting alongside men in a war to end all wars, she finally discovers her full powers and true destiny. That was quite the dramatic lull
in the musical track.
You know what? One of the great things about this show is that I always get lost in the tracks. Oh, and anybody who's listened long term know that I kind of zone out at times when I'm listening to the intros because it's so good. It's all musical scores and whatnot, and I'm a big nerd for all of that.
You're just a big nerd in general.
That is also
true. You're a big
true.
Nerd for a lot of things, including this electric cello.
Yes.
Solo.
Is it electric cello?
I think it's electric.
All we know is that it is cello, but we don't know if it's electric cello. That'd be interesting.
I mean, it sounds electric.
With like electric
it?
Pickups in it or something. That'd be really cool. Directed by Patty Jenkins, the film stars Gal Gadot, Chris Pine, Robin Wright, Danny Huston, David Thewlis, and many others. I think I said that right. David Thewlis?
Thewlis? Yeah, I don't know.
One of the most anticipated films of 2017, Wonder Woman serves as the fourth DC/Warner Brothers films following last year's Academy Award winning Suicide Squad.
Yeah, Academy Award brother.
You know, when you now every time anybody mentions that movie, you know
that, makeup.
From
makeup, you have to qualify. I mean, I know it's an Academy Award. Honestly, you've got to qualify it.
I'm just saddened that it's actually there. The film had an estimated budget of $120 million, actually spouting the smallest budget of all four DC films, right behind last year's Suicide Squad, which was only $175 million.
Only $175 million.
Only.
I mean, chump change.
But, I mean, if you look at, like, all the other ones, I think Man of Steel was $220 million, and Batman
was... Was it that high?
I believe it was.
Good night.
It was in the 200s, And Batman vs. Superman was $250 million.
That I believe.
So this one, for it being the smallest budget of all four, I think this one had a little bit more of an impact in terms of what it offered compared to the amount it spent.
It tells a much better story.
A much much more cohesive
story. In my personal
story.
Opinion.
So
it has, essentially, it's got a beautiful three-act structure.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've got the first act takes place entirely on Themyscira,
mm-hmm.
the island where the Amazons live. The second act is mainly London and then, you know, moving toward the front lines. And then mm-hmm. the third act is all on the front during World War One.
One or two?
One.
Okay, it was one. Okay.
Oh, it was definitely one.
Okay. So... Yeah, we're just going to jump right into this. And obviously, you know...
I mean, did you see the way that the plane had, like, the missile grenade things that you literally, like, lift out of the pouch and drop off the side yourself?
You're right.
It was World War One.
Hey, it's late. And, you know, we're still talking about a great movie. So, needless to say, we've talked about the DC stigma that's continually been plaguing all of their films that has come out, just the idea of them trying to play catch-up, them trying to create a franchise and push in as much as possible. What were your first impressions going into this film before, you know, the credits or before the film actually even started?
Yeah, the easy tell, if you will, was in Batman versus Superman, and we've talked about it numerous times.
Several, actually.
Not just in the main review that we did, but we've talked about it frequently. In my opinion, Wonder Woman was by far the best part of that movie.
No doubt.
And she wasn't even in it all that much. I mean, you know, again, you got the battle with Doomsday, which, while I think it was ill-advised to go that far that quickly with the DCEU, I mean, you can't help but smirk with her when she's like, "Oh, he actually hit me pretty hard.
Yeah.
This is going to be a real fight. I'm about to have some fun." I mean, like, she had a personality. It wasn't all business. It was mostly business, but she also had some fun with it. It was a good indicator of what we were going to see now in this film. And happy to report, this film is definitely consistent in terms of the way that they portray her motivations, her mm-hmm. psychology, the way that she is able to inject humor and go with the flow of the humor of some other characters. So it very much feels like the same character
it
in
does.
This film, which is great.
And coming into this film, one of the things, and you know us, if you've listened for any length of time, you know we value story over franchise. We value the content of what's in a film and not just the branding that's on the film. And so we're not really big on, you know, oh, well, if it's a Marvel, then it has to be good. If it's a DC, it has to be doo-doo. You know, or if it's Martin Scorsese, it has to be great. But if it's, you know, whomever else, you know, McGee or whomever,
right,
then it can't be. So we're not, that's not the
Although
way we
there
operate.
Is always the Michael Bay clause.
There is always a Michael Bay clause, which includes explosions and... That's a whole
Those
different
are
show.
Rarely. what am I looking for? Those rarely over deliver.
Yeah, rarely.
In the way that you want them to.
But needless to say, we thrive on great storytelling. And so coming into this film, actually, I'll be honest, going into every DC film that has come out, I have just pined and hoped that the film was going to be successful so that we can get this franchise off the ground and begin creating all the great stories that they can pull from within the DC comic universe. Much like Marvel has great stories and they're beginning to really touch on the more obscure and more non-popular, you know, storylines and whatnot to bring to the forefront and make them popular. I mean, ergo, the conversation that we had not too long ago about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sure.
So, DC has a huge pool to just gather resources from, but they have yet to tap into exactly what that vein is and how to deliver it in a more feasible package.
Well, and they really, in my personal opinion, and I know that this is pulling a little bit from the literature, if you will, the comic books themselves, DC just needs to embrace what DC is. And I know the super mega fans are going to be like, what are you talking about? They always have. Well, I don't know that they always have. I look at something like the way that Superman is portrayed in the TV show Supergirl versus the way that Superman is portrayed in Man of Steel and BVS. I see some distinctive differences, and one of them feels more like Superman than the other.
Yeah.
And it's the TV one to me, personally. Just, you know, it obviously not as much screen time involved in that. But still, you know, there's the likability. I think the thing that, for me, has been largely, not 100% missing, but just hasn't been a lock with the DCEU films to this point, is just the sheer likability. I mean, yes, they all tell jokes and you can laugh and, you know, giggle at jokes or, you know, whatever. You can cheer for them when they're doing their big power moves and whatever in the visual effects. But you have to just really like the characters, and they wouldn't have been around in publishing terms for 70 to 80 years.
Exactly.
If they weren't likable,
yeah,
people wouldn't have bought the issues for that long, and they certainly wouldn't care this much about when the movies come out. So I think one of the things that I feel this film does is they really embrace the likability of the character of Wonder Woman and several of the secondary characters as well. There's just that, I don't know, it feels less, what am I trying to say? Less like some bombastic showpiece.
Yes.
And more like, okay, if you were this individual with this upbringing and this crisis, it makes total sense how she responds.
Yeah.
There's nothing that you sit there and scratch your head and say, wait a minute, what?
Yeah, there's nothing in this that you have to take for granted that, oh, as an audience member, you should know this. And, oh, as a viewer or a supposed longtime fan of the comic book universe, that these things should be taken for granted. This should be taken for granted. This should be common knowledge. And having to do that, it puts extra work on the viewer. Like, if I'm going back to when we were talking about Batman versus Superman, there was a lot that was going on, and we had a few gentlemen on here not too long ago who raved and ranted about it. And mind you, that's their own, you know, opinion, but they were so excited because of the fact that the film did so much to true hardcore fans when they referenced this storyline, or they referenced that story arc, or they referenced this or these things. And as a non-hardcore DC fan, I mean, I'm you know, a decent Marvel fan comic book, and I'm a decent DC comic book fan, but for me, not being so hardcore, I didn't catch a lot of that, and so ergo, I missed out on a lot of the true gems that made it a possible good film for me. And so with this one, it's not like that. You're not going in there like, okay, I had to have read the run from, you know, Wonder Woman 17 through 48, and then I had to jump over and see the original single run that they did for her in a graphic novel, and then I had to know this. It was just, I went in, and they presented a solid character whom I had been introduced to prior, and they gave her a beautiful backstory that, like you said,
literally beautiful. Themyscira.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I would move there in a heartbeat.
Oh, trust me, if it wasn't hidden by fog, I would totally move there, too.
I mean, it is gorgeous.
Until my wife would call me back home. So.
Well,
true.
You could go. She'd fit in pretty well. I mean, you know, they all train with swords and stuff. She'd be like, yeah, I'm going to cut you.
So the film goes into, you know, like Chad said, we get a great introduction. You know, the first act obviously goes through her as a child. And
well, I do want to hop on something that you were just talking about, because I think that it's a really fine line, an interesting distinction to make. But I think a lot of what we've seen in terms of the overall architecture of the DCEU,
yeah,
is that you've had this rapid buildup of extreme situations that don't necessarily always make entirely logical sense unless you're a super fan. It's kind of the difference between, hi, my name is James Gunn, and I'm going to put in a boatload of Easter eggs in Guardians of the Galaxy and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 that are not important to the story, but they are fun winks, like left and right all the time to the super fans.
Yeah.
That's one way of doing it. But then you have almost, you know, making the Easter eggs an important part of the story without explaining what they are, which is what, you know, things, especially in BVS, did. Thankfully, this movie doesn't deal with any of that mess, because it is your job. If you are the storyteller, if you're the screenwriter, the director, the cinematographer, the actors, the composer, whatever your role is, it is your job to tell your story coherently, unless your objective is to confuse people.
Yeah.
And here, Patty Jenkins and her ensemble and her team behind the scenes did a really nice job of not leaving anything to assumption or chance. They told you everything that you needed to know.
And it was a cohesive story. It didn't bounce back around. Like, so just a little insight. The film does start with her receiving, in current day, her receiving the image of, you know, the group of them that you see in Batman versus Superman.
Sure.
And needless to say, it keeps the cohesive storyline moving forward in terms of the actual story that is being told, not jumping all over the place, which is, half-mindedly, I kind of expected something like that, like a jump out of the story itself to remind you, oh, but we're still grounded in current day and this is what's going on, or whatever. The film is consistent throughout. It doesn't really deviate at any point in time, like Batman versus Superman, which jumped so many different mental tracks. And it was just...
And it's so refreshing. Exactly. It's so nice to just like, okay, can you just tell me the story? Just tell me the story. Show it to me, tell it to me, whatever. I mean, you're right. The modern day sequences, if you will, are the bookends.
Yes.
The very first scene and the very last scene are modern day post BVS, almost like a pen pal exchange between Wonder Woman and, well, Bruce Wayne. You know, but everything else that happens is set in the past, and it is Diana's origin story.
Yeah. So we get into the film, and we are introduced right away to obviously little Diana and her mom, which is...
Who is awesome, by the way.
Oh, yeah. She's...
All of her, like, let me stand here and do the same moves that the grown women are doing when they're fighting each other.
As she's watching all of these, you know, trained Amazonians.
Adorable.
Yeah, it's so cool. And you see General Antiope?
Antiope.
Antiope, which is played by Robin Wright.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see soon Queen
Hippolyta.
Hippolyta, which is played by Connie Nielsen, which in my mind, she just happened to look similar to Maggie Gyllenhaal. And yeah, that was a great
exchange. Don't worry, everybody. I kiboshed that immediately. Eddie turned to me. And this is within, what, the first 5 minutes of the film.
It was.
Is that Maggie Gyllenhaal?
I'm like, wow.
Bro, did you watch Gladiator? Do you know Lucilla?
It made sense after the fact, okay? So we're introduced to that, and you know, the whole origin of where Diana is, you know, where she's from in terms of the island, and her mom explains to her about how the whole creation of man and the creation of the Amazonians and how they were created to protect the men.
Mankind. All mankind.
Mm-hmm. And that didn't go so well, so the Amazonians went to their own island as a gift by Zeus, and big war, and Ares ultimately is the bad guy. So that's what you're giving to at an early...
Which is pretty well in line with the way that the comics tell the story. Ares is one of Wonder Woman's major villains.
Okay.
I mean, he's a major villain of all the heroes, but specifically her.
So I just have to say, you know, as time goes on and we see her train and we see her become, you know, the grown-up Wonder Woman, Diana, Gal Gadot, I have to say, Gal Gadot looks like she's put in the work for this role. Like, she looks
she owned it.
Oh, yeah. No doubt in my mind. One of the things that I was worried about, and it was one of the things that I had caught on into the actual trailer, was I was kind of worried that the film's CGI that I saw in the trailer was kind of going to be the way the whole film looked. And luckily for me, that must have been like some of the unpolished CGI, because everything in this film looked legit. Like, I was floored by the way everything looked. Much more than when we talked about King Arthur. There was no sense of video game-esque.
Right, where you break into VFX
exactly.
mode.
It was more, it seemed more polished.
I mean, you get it. You get it in the final battle sequence a lot, but that most comic book movies are going to have that shift into CGI VFX land for the final sequence. I mean, it's going to feel a little more cartoony and a little less grounded in reality.
Yeah. And then obviously we see Steve Archer's plane go down, which, you know, Steve Trevor. Why did I get Steve Archer? What is Steve Archer? I don't know.
No say.
Anyway, Steve Trevor, whose plane goes down and is kind of the catalyst, you know, event that begins everything else that goes on in the film. You know, and so we see, we're introduced to him, which is played by Chris Pine. And ultimately she is led away from the island to go with Chris.
Well, she chooses. Not led away. She chooses. She decides that the rest of them are basically being a bunch of scaredy cats. And if they really took their role seriously as the protectors of mankind, when they hear something from an outsider like, oh, yes, this is the war to end all wars, it's like the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, aren't we supposed to go out and do something about that?
Yeah.
And all the rest of them are like, well, your mom said no. And she says, okay, well, my mom's wrong, so I'm going to do this. In a nutshell.
That's it in a nutshell. And so that kind of jumps over to, like you were saying, the second act, where she heads over to London with Steve Trevor. Steve Trevor.
Who is an American soldier working for the British as a spy in the German Air Force.
Yes.
So follow that flowchart.
Yeah, no joke. That one took me a little bit to kind of comprehend as well. So they head back because Steve Trevor has this incredible information that needs to be passed on, you know, and to his superiors. And so we get to the second act, and a lot of what you've seen in the trailers in terms of, you know, oh, this is my secretary, or and this is, you know, oh, you know, block a bullet with her wrist. And a lot of what you saw in the trailer, that's kind of in the second act.
Mm-hmm, a lot of it.
That's where you're introduced to Miss Etta Candy, who's played by Lucy Davis, the little secretary.
Sure.
She was charming at times. She's in the film.
She's used sparingly, which is a character like that. It's perfect to use them sparingly.
You're introduced to the general, you're introduced to you're introduced to quite a bit of people. Danny Huston is the General Ludendorff, whom they're off the looking
German
for.
German dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Main German dude. I have to say, the difference between this film and a lot of the other DC films that we've actually seen prior to this was I am so appreciative of what we were saying earlier, the consistency of the story, the way they stayed on track. It didn't stay on Diana for a second and then deviate back to the island to see what was going on back at the island while Diana was
Once you leave that island, you don't go back.
Yeah, and you're focused on the journey of Diana coming to a realization of the world that is around her that she hasn't experienced. And it follows that. It stays with that. And not only does it stay with that, but it stays with the dynamic of the relationship between her and Chris Pine, her and the rest of his compadres, you know, her and even just the world itself outside, the cities, the towns. You are following through the eyes of Diana what the world is really made of. And at no point in time throughout the entire film does it deviate at all, except to actually build little parts of the story. You know, you got to know what the villain's doing. You got to know what this is going on. But in terms of the fullness of the story,
but it's minor. I mean, you're almost always with her.
Yeah, exactly. And so I have to say that is such a professional, and I use professional not as a derogatory term to all the other films, but it's such a professional thing to do for a director to keep the focus Where all the other films, the norm has been to jump from here and there, left and right, go from here to there. Suicide Squad went from over here to the hula dancer over in the subway to, you know, to what, you know, Viola Davis was doing and all this stuff.
I almost didn't get that in time, but that was funny.
But the films, they're always all over the place. Take, for example, it was used a little bit more artistically in Man of Steel because it was building the story, but it was still focused on Henry Cavill, but it was building the story where it was at the modern day, and then it would jump to the younger version, then it would jump to the teenage, and that's Zack Snyder.
I mean, honestly, and I know that movies did this before, so don't get on my case, but the influence of a TV show like Lost, which, as part of its narrative structure, continually incorporated flashbacks for the first 2.5 seasons?
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, every episode was half present day, half flashback on whatever the focus character was for that episode. So, and people liked that structure and responded to how much it makes your brain kind of work to draw connections. And so a lot of films in and outside of the comic book adaptation genre have done, you know, similar story structures. What I really respect, here's my thing. Patty Jenkins,
yeah,
director of this film, previously directed the Oscar-winning film Monster back in
2003.
And nothing in between, I don't think.
Nope.
But here's what she recently had to say. They were asking her about, you know, what are the special features on the Wonder Woman DVD, Blu-ray DVD release going to be? What are the cut scenes? And her response was, there are no cut scenes. We basically took what was in the script and we made that movie. I have to say, the budding screenwriter within me, like, sang on the inside, like, wait a minute, you made a plan, you executed that plan, and you stuck with that plan start to finish. On a movie like this, with a lot of expectation, dollars, hope, whatever writing on it, that is unheard of.
Oh, yeah.
For the editing process not to, you know, change what you're doing. You do pick up shoots and reshoots, whatever. She said basically the only thing that ended up a little bit different than the first version of what we shot is a sequence in the transition between Act 2 and Act 3 where Diana removes her cloak and she's in her full Wonder Woman armor and she goes into no man's land in between the Allied and German trenches. And she basically takes on the German army on her own, right?
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
It was a great scene.
And but she said Patty Jenkins said basically that scene was reshot to, you know, use the camera a little bit differently or whatever. But aside from that, this movie is what we planned for it to be from the beginning. I think that is superb.
I hadn't heard that. That's actually really impressive to take. And honestly, that's a lot of trust to have as a director, to have in your writing team, to be able to say, okay, this is it. All right, we're doing it and going to town with what you got. There wasn't like, well, you know, this scene, I don't know, maybe we should make this work this way. To be able to take what was given to you and to have so much trust in whomever you're working with to say, all right, this is the movie. This is the movie. Boom.
Yes.
That's impressive. And that's.
And it shows. I mean, we're sitting there in the end, and one of my first thoughts was, oh my gosh, from start to finish, that movie made absolute sense.
Oh, yeah.
It never got confusing. It never contradicted itself. There are some things that I would have liked to have changed and done a bit differently, and we'll get to those. But overall, like, it was coherent, it was cohesive, and moment one to moment 1001 all fit together really, really well.
Yeah. So, like I said, it was a great cohesive story being told. another great thing, and I don't know if this is a positive or negative in terms of the overall grand scheme of things. I like the way it didn't have to put so much focus on anybody else, like in terms of anybody else in the DCCU or EU, whatever you want to call it.
I think technically they say DCEU.
EU. Like, you didn't have to worry about, all right, here's the scene where, you know, Diana meets Thomas Wayne as a child and does this, or
right.
This is where, you know, she flew over to the States and landed in Kansas, and at that exact time, you know, Martha Kent was a little girl who saw Wonder Woman go by and she wanted to be fearless, whatever. They didn't do anything cheesy like that. They didn't want to create bridges where it just didn't seem feasible or didn't seem just plausible. And the fact that they like I said, they kept the focus where it needed to be, building this story of probably one of their most successful characters right now in their franchise, was the smartest decision by Patty Jenkins. Like, we're not gonna do this little throwback to Superman's parents, or the throwback to maybe Cyborg's dad. His grandfather was also an engineer for, you know, right, the British, whatever. There was nothing like that to have to pull you out of what was already an engrossing tale.
Right. There's no need for it. You know, it's,
yeah,
it's that whole, you know, she's clearly already a part of the DCEU. She was in Batman versus Superman.
Yeah,
I mean, like,
yeah,
her actual her as Wonder Woman,
mm-hmm,
same performer, same, you know, whatever. But so there's no need to reestablish all this extra stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is. Her story is her own. It's very refreshing. I mean, she is winsomely naive about how things work outside, mm-hmm, of Themyscira, where she's grown up her entire life,
yeah,
and never left, and, you know, because when she leaves, she never gets to come back. So, you know, she has this tremendous moment of courage. Her mother looks her in the face and says, "You have been my greatest joy, and now, in this moment, you are my greatest sorrow," because they both know she's leaving. She gone.
Yeah.
She gone.
Yeah.
And she's taking the really cool sword with her, and the lasso and the shield and the armor. But, it's great, because unlike something like Man of Steel,
mm-hmm,
where he has to learn who he is, minus one pretty significant portion of, Diana's own past that her mother chooses not to tell her,
mm-hmm,
she knows exactly who she is.
Oh, yeah.
She knows where she comes from. She knows who her people are. She knows what their, you know, goal in life, if you will, is supposed to be. She has no question about that, and it is her true north. It guides her every action and decision, and even makes her a little bit foolhardy. I mean, some of those battle sequences, she goes out there not knowing,
oh, yeah,
how the battlefield is arranged, who the enemy combatants are, what weapons they're using, what she's going to do to defeat them. She just knows her job is to go defeat the bad guys, protect people.
Totally.
And she goes with it.
And she does. And you're right. It does give her, you see the evolution of the mindset of Diana, as, like you said, at certain instances where she's even, you know, training, you sense somewhat of the arrogance and the you know, the taking it for granted of her ability, and ultimately where, you know, she's constantly glancing back at her mom while training and whatever, and she ends up getting knocked to the ground. Even through the battles that she fights on the actual front itself, up until she has the full realization at the end of what it's all about, and it, honestly, it all comes together really well. You know, from that, the innocence and the mindset of that she had early on, all the way through to the full understanding of why she needs to fight, what she's fighting for, and why she has to take it to a level to where it's the most important thing in the world for her. And you as an audience member also come to the same realization as she does as this journey continues, which only great filmmaking does that. you know, you don't really have the opportunity to really see not everybody at the same time looked at, you know, Batman versus Superman, like when he goes Martha and like, wait, that's his mom's name. And, you know, not everybody was following that same tangent.
No.
But in this point,
not everybody was.
you definitely follow where she comes to the point where she realizes what the most important thing in the world is, because as the film is going and it's showing you these things and you're understanding, and all of a sudden you and her have this light bulb moment, like, whoa. And it ultimately causes her to become one of the most powerful beings in the entire world, honestly, in that sequence.
Sure.
And so, yeah. I mean,
she has, you know, like all great origin stories do, she has a tremendous destiny that she needs to realize, you know. And I think that one of the beautiful things about this particular approach to the story, to a story in the DCEU, is that her destiny is kind of, you know, just this dignified, praiseworthy, beautiful, wonderful thing that she can rise to the occasion, versus what we've seen a lot of, which is, well, it's mostly just a bunch of fighting your lesser tendencies and, you know, like trying to live beyond what, you know. It's just, her story is very different. Tonally, it's very different.
Yeah.
She's on a path to rise to her destiny.
Yeah.
And she's already really freaking cool when you first meet her.
Yeah.
Even as a little girl, I mean, she's really cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's got a pretty interesting perspective on the world and her place in it, that grows over the course of the story. And it's nice to have one of those, you know, really fulfilling origin stories.
And as great as films are, obviously, every film has its hiccups. Not every film is perfect.
True.
And there were a couple of little speed bumps that didn't really settle as well as they should with the film. I know you probably had a couple, so...
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I have one main grievance with the film, and it's common. It's a common grievance. So everything in this movie escalates to your classic final boss battle showdown, and, of course, in typical comic book movie practice, everything becomes video game-like. And basically cartoonish. The thing that I truly didn't like, it's got two levels to it. So the bad guy, Ares, won't give away who Ares is, or who is Ares. There's a bit of a reveal there. But basically, in terms of power set, they turn Ares into Magneto, in a way, from the X-Men franchise. he's picking up metal, shaping it the way he wants it to be, and throwing it at her, and trying to trap her with various metal objects. And not really something that's becoming of somebody like Ares, who is the god of war in the Greek pantheon.
Yeah.
You would think that he would find more inventive ways to fight her.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of a disconnect there in terms of, well, we've already seen Magneto several times in multiple movies do things with metal. So why not make this guy do something different?
Yeah.
Because he's the god of war, for crying out loud. He has every trick up his sleeve. So that was underwhelming. Really, the battle sequence was more for the emotional payoff than the fisticuffs themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And you do have a really, you know, great moment for her in the inevitable defeat of the bad guy. And I won't say anything more about that. But the other thing that bothered me about that final sequence is the dialogue. Like, in addition to the visuals becoming more cartoonish, which is fine and expected because, you know, we don't actually shape metal with our thoughts and throw them at each other, and
we don't,
you know, play with electricity on our fingertips. Like, that just, there's no special effects, practical effects way to do that convincingly. So that's fine. But the dialogue for me also became very cartoonish. Like, very, like, I'm the bad guy. I'm the good guy. We are going to fight. I am going to fight you. Like, it just, there was so much more nuance in the earlier parts of the film that you kind of just, you wanted that sophistication to carry through.
Yeah.
In the inevitable boss battle, and it kind of just didn't.
True.
So it's not a huge slam, but it could have been done better, in my opinion.
And I kind of have to agree that that final battle did be a little, it almost seemed like every line that Ares was trying to deliver seemed to be a line given by David Crusoe in CSI Miami.
Yes.
You know, it was like, this tarmac seems to be hot and sunglasses. Whatever, however that thing goes, it just seemed to be very
thank you for that.
Yeah, anytime. It seemed to always be kind of on the brink of just one line short or one word short of a sarcastic punchline.
Yeah.
And mind you, you know, going back to kind of a conversation that we had in the car, they're comics. Obviously, they have roots in you know, literature that is made for children. So sometimes the dialogue does tend to get a little cartoonish and a little lackluster. But for the idea that the film carried such a high caliber of conversations and dialogue and content in the dialogue, not just, you know, oh, you know, hey, I'm a Scottish guy. Hey, I'm, you know, an Amazonian. We should go and work together kind of deal. It was legitimate content that was in each opportunity for dialogue. There was never a moment wasted. You know, even the conversation where she has with one of the other guys and she thinks, you know, whatever's going on and they're having a conversation about Greek mythology. There's roots into that. And there's actual context to that conversation that actually is more than just like, hey, I like hamburgers. So I like hot dogs. I don't like you if you like hot dogs. There was more to it. And so the way it followed through with that last sequence in terms of the dialogue, I do agree with you in that way.
Well, and it did a really nice job. I like that you're bringing up some of the other secondary characters because you do, at one point, Steve Trevor and Diana Prince, they do try to get the British military officials and government to sanction a mission to stop the bad guys. So you've got, Ludendorff and Dr. Maru, the woman who with a half plastic face who creates poison like, you know, mustard gas, for example. Mm-hmm. And they're planning to use it to kill millions of people. And since the officials believe that they're close to signing an armistice, they say no. And so Steve Trevor has to go and get some of his compadres that he's kind of built some connections as a spy. And so you get three guys who easily could have been just bodies in a room, you know, just caricatures. There's the Scottish guy who's a marksman. There's a Native American guy who's in Europe, and they call him the chief. And then the other guy, was he Turkish? I don't remember what they said his background was.
I think it was Turkish.
And, you know, they're not in the movie all that much, but each of them has something distinctive beyond any kind of broad brushstroke stereotyping that you would do for them. You know, the one guy wanted to be an actor. The Native American is like the last of his people almost. The Scottish guy has PTSD. And so, you know, you've got these nuances and these, you know, these shadings, which were beneficial. Otherwise, it's like, well, why not just have the two of them go off and do this stuff? They don't need a team.
Yeah.
But now you have something to hold on to for why you care about these three other guys.
Yeah, and it's not just thrown in there like, you know, you've been spending already 30 minutes of your time. Because I'm going to let you guys know now, this movie is 2 hours and 26 minutes long. So there's a bit of time that you will be spending in that seat. But you're not with any of these particular individuals for about 45, 50 minutes. And then the filmmaker decides to dump all of the content about one particular person all in one scene, you know, where you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that his leg was actually wooden and he lost it while saving his family in, you know, in a huge hurricane storm filled with sharks. It's nothing ridiculous. Wow. Like that. Gently and gradually being revealed about the truth of these individuals, and they each have their own saving grace moment, their own moment of redemption, if sure. you will, where you will see that not only are each of these individuals facing something or going through something, but they also have a point to where they have the confidence and they have the ability to be more than what they were. And that's, it's great because this doesn't, like I said, it doesn't just dump all that on you all at once. It actually gives the audience an opportunity to go through that journey with them while they're on the same journey alongside Diana.
Yeah, and it shows how inspiring she is mm-hmm. as the focal point character. Like, her bravery and her, you know, passion for helping others impacts the rest of them around her.
Yeah, no doubt.
Which is what great heroes do.
Yeah, and you can tell, I just have to say this about Patty Jenkins, you can tell that this woman currently loves the property that she was working with, because anybody else would have taken this, and quite possibly, I'm not saying that every, you know, male director, even female director, is just some kind of, you know, sicko out there or something, but you could have easily had somebody turn this film and made Wonder Woman into more of a sex symbol, or more of a visual eye candy, if you will.
Right.
But Patty Jenkins took this property. She created not only a viable film in the DCEU, but she's also allowed one of the most underrated, if you will, heroes in the comic book universe, and given her an opportunity to shine for so many other people, not just women and little girls, but even, you know, everybody, to get a chance to just really enjoy and just bask in this awesome character that she is actually bringing to the forefront, bringing up to the silver screen, and allowing to be really something else other than just, oh yeah, by the way, it's, you know, Batman, Aquaman, Hal Jordan, we got the Tinker, whatever. Oh, and at the very back, oh yeah, that's Wonder Woman. You know, no, she is an important role in this universe, and this film made that very aware.
Apparently. Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, in the comic books, Wonder Woman is one of the big three in DC. I mean, they call them the Trinity: Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and she's definitely a huge influence and has been for decades and decades and decades. The problem has been translating the high points and the beauty of that story to the big screen. They've yeah. tried for 15, 20, 25 years.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, script after script after script after director after director after director, just on the floor. Just, nope, that's not going to work. And so it's really nice to finally have Wonder Woman on the big screen, because as much as I love Marvel, and always will, mm-hmm. I mean, that's they're my gang, right? But DC heroes are bigger, bolder, more powerful,
yeah.
in general, and therefore there are the threats that they face are larger as well. Otherwise, it's not worth telling the story.
Exactly,
they are made for the big screen.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
As good as the Arrowverse, if you will, on the CW has been for the most part, in terms of giving us weekly episodes with superheroes that you care about and want to see them succeed, DC heroes are made for the big screen.
Oh yeah,
they're huge, and Wonder Woman is one of the biggest, and certainly the biggest female superhero in the history of comic book publishing. So it's really nice to finally see her come to life.
And now, I mean,
in her own story,
she is right now the biggest comic book, female comic book superhero in the cinematic universe now. Because, I mean, even if you take a look at what Marvel's done in terms of film, they've done great things. You know, let's not negate that at all. But they have yet to create a solid solo female superhero film.
Correct.
And DC has not only hit this out of the park, but they've created a whole new just level of how the film needs to be done. And so kudos to Patty Jenkins and everyone else out there who made this, you know, successful. But I have to say that is, if not one of the most important aspects of this film, is that they have created something that not only Marvel, but no other property or franchise or studio have been able to do.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, there, you and I were talking briefly, this is a bit off the rabbit trail, but we were talking briefly after the film about there are quite a few nuances that are similar to Captain America, the First Avenger, mm-hmm. because that was set during World War II. The Germans were the enemy then, mm-hmm. you know, et cetera, et cetera. They've got, he has a ragtag motley crew, you know, that he's working with, the Howling Commandos.
Howling Commandos.
And there's some espionage going, you know, like whatever. So there are definitely parallels in terms of the type of story. But I think that in the same way that Captain America as a character is this gold standard lightning rod character in the Marvel print universe and cinematic universe, that's exactly what Wonder Woman is for DC. I mean, yeah, Superman should be that, but he already hasn't been on film. So to give that, like, to the only other character that makes sense to make that moral compass linchpin of the whole thing,
oh yeah,
is Wonder Woman, and they've done a very beautiful job with it here.
So overall, the film was a great success. In terms of the DC films that we've seen so far, it has pretty much surpassed all of those in terms of quality and story, and has become probably the best thing we've seen coming out of DC and Warner Brothers in a long while. So, Chad, in the interest of all things, does it pass or does it fail, and how many monocles?
You know, in the interest of all things, I would say it absolutely passes with flying colors. And I can't lie to you because I'm wrapped up in the lasso of truth.
It's true. I've had him wrapped up the entire time we've been talking, so.
And in terms of overall monocleage, I would give it 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5.
I think that final sequence, again, a little too cartoony for me. Bad guy feels a lot like Magneto with a different name, and I don't think lives up to what he's supposed to be if he is the god of war. So, 4 out of 5, but really, I mean, if they had stopped before the major battle sequence or just executed it differently, it would have been, I would have given it more monocles.
As for me, it obviously passes for me, and excuse me, in terms of monocleage, I'm honestly...
You like that word?
I do. We might have to put that on a shirt sometime. In terms of the monocleage that we'll have to give this film, I'm probably going to have to give it a 4.5 out of 5. And the reason being, yes, that last act, that last scene did pull me out a bit just because of the way the context of the conversation went and the overall, you know, Raiden versus Magneto thing going on. I do have to say that the overall message of the film, the overall idea of what this film carries, for me, outweighs a lot of that. And honestly, I value more than anything else that the film has done. So that, for me, allows me to give this film a 4.5. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Let us know what you think on the Facebook page at facebook.com/Filmlosophers or on our Twitter page at twitter.com/Filmlosophy101. A couple of upcoming weekend releases we want to let you know about. Obviously, go out there, go check out Wonder Woman. Go and see the film, you know, go see how awesome it is. Or mind you, if you don't think it's awesome, please go check it out and let us know. Also, another one for the animated fans out there, Captain Underpants, the first epic movie, debuts this Friday. Have fun with that.
I don't even know how I feel about that.
This was confession time. I actually read the books when I was a kid. So they were a series first before this, all this stuff. But I don't know how that's going to translate here. But you let us know. So, of course...
Yeah, you go see the movie and tell us, because we're not going to go see the movie and tell you.
But this is a great conversation. And honestly, you know, I'm actually probably going to be seeing this film again this weekend. And so as will Chad.
Absolutely.
Because I will be dragging him or he will be dragging me. But from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
Class dismissed.